could also be a spiral staircase, which could also be a twisted ladder, which could also be a spring, which could also be a spiral.
Have you ever stopped to think about just how amazing life is? Craig Venter has. He's another renowned scientist who once pored over Schrödinger's book, What is Life? Venter says, we're still learning about the miraculous nature of life on Earth.
We now have discovered a large number of organisms on our planet that can take huge doses of ionizing radiation. It can be totally desiccated, exist in a vacuum. But once it finds water, that organism can rehydrate and repair all the damage that's done and start replicating again. We have organisms that exist in such strong acid or base, if I put my finger in it, my finger would dissolve instantly. But we have bacteria that live in those conditions. I think the world record for temperature right now thus far on our planet is a bacteria that lives at an archaea at on the order of 120 degrees centigrade. Water boils at 100 degrees centigrade.
Craig Venter's widely regarded as one of science's leading innovators. And he's not afraid to butt heads with the scientific establishment. In fact, he competed with the federal government's own Human Genome Project to be the first to map our genome. Venter is also at the forefront of efforts to create life from scratch. In May of 2010, he became the first scientist to create a synthetic life form. While his research team didn't actually create life in a test tube, they came as close as anyone has so far. Steve Paulson wanted to know what drives Craig Venter.
You are typically described as a maverick scientist with a big ego and a confrontational style. And of course, you famously chose to compete with the huge government program to sequence the human genome. What would you say motivates you as a scientist?
Well, scientific discovery is certainly the number one thing that motivates me. I got turned on early to science and found no greater thrill in life than making new scientific discoveries, adding to the knowledge pool, understanding our own lives, understanding our universe around us, trying to recognize how finite life is, something I learned in Vietnam from seeing a large number of young men my age and younger killed there. I felt I came out of Vietnam with a unique gift that so many others didn't have. I had my life in front of me, and I've been determined to accomplish something with it.
Let me ask you about that experience in Vietnam. You were a Navy medic, which I am guessing must have been a harrowing experience. Did you see a lot of people die?
I think everybody in Vietnam that was in the medical corps, unfortunately, did. I was there during the Tet Offensive in Da Nang, and we were overwhelmed with casualties, with the wounded and the dead and the dying. I had to learn what triage really meant, of how to help those that you could and just make comfortable the ones that you clearly could not help. Those are tough lessons to learn at age 20 and 21, and it changed the direction of my life.
How did it change your life?
Well, I went from being a poor student in school that nearly flunked out of high school due to lack of interest, somebody who moved to Southern California after barely graduating from high school to take up a surfing career, to coming back to wanting to see how much I could accomplish in my lifetime.
I'm wondering if that experience of seeing so much death also influenced your decision to go into medical research.
One of the lessons I absolutely learned in Vietnam was knowledge was power. And it was actually very frustrating how limited the medical profession was. All the diseases that I've ended up working on, I was first exposed to as a Navy corpsman, including malaria, tuberculosis, cholera, even syphilis and gonorrhea, all the organisms that my teams decoded the genomes of to help understanding of those diseases, help come up with new vaccines, new treatments.
I want to pick up on sort of this reputation about you, this idea that you are a maverick scientist who goes his own way. Do you see that as an important part of your identity? I mean, do you think about that, and do you sort of instinctively bristle at efforts to direct what you do?
No, I think it's more important as a scientist, but I think these lessons apply to all aspects of life. I recently told graduating classes that if they're not butting up against dogma, against bureaucracy, against the static state of thinking in our society, that they're not doing the right things. We can't keep doing what we're doing as a society and expect to survive long term on this planet. So to me, it's more of a shame there's not more radical thinking. That's certainly how science moves forward. It goes by people having new ideas that take the whole field in new directions. So it's unfortunate that it seemed as unusual.
So is that why you formed your own company, to compete with the federal effort to map the human genome? You felt like there was too much homogeneous thinking there?
Well, it was even worse than that. That homogeneous thinking, even though we had a whole new approach to sequence genomes that, in fact, allowed us to sequence the first three genomes in history, we couldn't get funding from the federal government because the peer review system decided that these techniques would, in fact, not work for sequencing the human genome. So I had the choice of doing nothing because I couldn't get funding. Fortunately, an instrument company that sold sequencing instruments had a new instrument, and they were excited about using it with my new technique, and they put up money to sequence the human genome. The only catch was they wanted to form a new company. That's what led to Celera. So I would have far preferred to have public funding, but that's not the nature of science funding in this country. We have tens of billions of dollars available for research, but it's a system that's largely unwilling to fund new ideas. Once new ideas get established, it's relatively easy to get substantial funding to follow up on them. And by the way, every lab that was sure these techniques would not work have adopted them all as the standard of how genomic science is now done in the field. So I think that sort of proved that the experiment was worth doing.
That's Craig Venter talking with Steve Paulson. Venter was one of the first scientists to sequence the human genome. In May of 2010, his research team created the first synthetic life form.